It is Thursday morning, and that means it's time for Perspectives on WFSU-FM. How you doing? I'm Tom Flanagan. So good to have you at the other end of the telephone wires and the email machine and the radio waves for the next hour, as we also invite your calls and comments at 414-1234 locally, 800-926-8809, and perspectives at WFSU.org. It really came as a surprise, even a shock to some folks a few months back when it was announced that longtime 7 Days of Opening Nights executive director Steve McQueen was moving on. And if you're unfamiliar with 7 Days of Opening Nights, it's been around since 1999. And I think that was the last time it actually was 7 Days of Opening Nights. It has blossomed and expanded into a much larger event since then. Anyway, after a nationwide search, a successor to Steve McQueen was announced, and that was Christopher Hecox. He stepped into the role officially on August 1st. No stranger when it comes to either music or Florida State University campus. He graduated from FSU with a bachelor's degree in music and studied jazz and contemporary media at the University of Rochester in New York, and went on to do all kinds of stuff. Most recently as executive director of the 120-year-old Friday Musicale Festival over in Jacksonville. He'd been doing that since 2009, and now is back in his home stomping grounds, as it were. We welcome back Christopher Hecox.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good to have you back from the wilds of the St. John shores there, as it were.
Thank you very much. Glad to be back.
Yeah, and we really want to get into the nuts and bolts of what's going on with this exciting 2013 7 Days of Opening Nights schedule. We also have some performing artists along with us here. Over here on my right, your left, as you look at the radio, Emily Johnson, director, choreographer, originally from Alaska, currently based in Minneapolis. And a resume that reads almost like a latter-day Martha Graham. She has done so many things, and we want to talk about all that, too. Emily, so good to have you here.
Thank you very much.
And also on the performing dance stage, Aretha Aoki, dance artist originally from Pacific Northwest, specifically Vancouver. Exactly. A Fresh Tracks artist from 2011-2012. Mm-hmm. Let's see, your work's been shown as part of the shared showings at Catch, New York Live Arts, The Kitchen, and Chen Dance Center, 92nd Street Y, Studio 303, and all over creation. It's just an incredible background, and you're going to be gracing our stage too, right?
I will, with Emily.
That is going to be really exciting. Well, here, we're going to break format here. Before we go and get into some specifics with our guests here, we're going to go immediately to the phones by the special request of Roy in Mighty Monticello. Hey, Roy.
Hi, Tom. And welcome back to Tallahassee, Chris.
Thank you.
I can't afford a season ticket, but I try to catch some performances each year. I had the good fortune of hearing Esperanza Spalding in a very small venue in Jacksonville a couple of years ago before she won her Grammy. I just think she would be perfect for next year, and hopefully she would have time to conduct some workshops for the local universities and schools. She's amazing.
Well, Roy, I was there with you at that concert at Riverside Fine Arts at the Church of the Good Shepherd. I believe that's where you're talking about.
Yes, sir.
I was in the balcony for that concert. It was a wonderful concert, and Esperanza's been back to Jacksonville three times, and she's coming back in October at the Florida Theater in downtown Jacksonville. And I really appreciate your suggestion, and I'm not going to show my hand. I can't do that. But Esperanza is the type of artist that I truly want to bring to this community. She's young. She's vibrant. She's an outstanding musician. She's a great educator. And she puts on one heck of a show, as you know. So thank you so much for the suggestion. I appreciate it.
Well, you're welcome. And I think she would just be spectacular in Ruby Diamond.
She would, and she would be spectacular with our students too. As a matter of fact, I've spoken to some of our faculty about her and other artists, and yes, she would definitely be great.
Boy, appreciate the suggestion, Roy, and thanks so much for calling in.
I can't make it, but apparently she's playing at the Clearwater Jazz Festival, but I think that's an outdoor venue, and I'm just not sure how her group would sound in the outdoors. But Ruby Diamond would be wonderful.
Thank you, Roy.
Appreciate it, Roy. 414-1234, the number for perspectives, by the way. Did you get that a lot, Chris, where folks come up to you and say, boy, you got to get so-and-so into the act here?
Yeah, that's part of the job, I think. You know, I've been presenting for 12 years now, and no matter what you present, there are very enthusiastic audiences out there that want to see something. But one of the great things about Tallahassee is it's a very educated arts community, and they're very passionate about the arts here. So, the suggestions that I've received already from being here the last 6-7 weeks have been fantastic, just like Roy, some really good ideas.
We'll go down the rundown that you already have locked in here for the upcoming season in just a minute. But first, with Emily Johnson, your connection to this whole thing, how did you get – I don't want to say it kind of, compelled into it. Obviously, you already have a connection here, and you're going to be part of the whole staging for the 2013 session. Talk about that connection a little, if you would.
Sure. I'm in residence, actually, at the Maggie Alcy National Center for Choreography, which is housed within Florida State University's School of Dance building. And Maggie Alcy National Center for Choreography, or MANCY, is an amazing organization that is dedicated to fostering and developing the process of creating contemporary performance work and dance and the process of research. And I have been very honored to be here for 5 different residencies in the development of 2 different works. The first was the Thank You Bar, which I started in 2009, and now this piece, which is called Ni Chung Ni. And we're currently in our 3rd residency, sort of putting some final development touches onto the piece, working with the final set design, final costume designs, all these final things before we move it from where we're rehearsing right now to the theater.
That in itself is a huge job, just to get that. You get used to working in one particular space and set of circumstances, and then you kind of have to transplant it someplace else.
It's true, yep. And my work specifically tries to adapt to place, and not only to places like you're talking about, moving it from one theater to another or from one studio space to a theater space, but actually I try to also adapt to different cities, to different towns, to different places. It's actually very different to perform here in Tallahassee than it is to perform where I'm from in Minneapolis or in San Francisco. And, I don't like the idea of just sort of importing my dances into a place, but I like for my dances to really relate to people, to audiences here, to people here. I want it to mean something to people who come see it here. And I want my work to also relate to the land here and to the ground here that is actually supporting the work.
Aretha Aoki, what is the state of contemporary dance right now? Because many, that's just a general question,
it's such a
isn't
huge
it?
Question.
Yeah, but just from your angle, from your perspective, what is it like to be engaged in this right now? Is there even a market for it? Because we see so much popular and contemporary dancing, whether it's Dancing with the Stars, and please don't throw up, but that sort of thing is the popularized. And then you have the more fine art tradition that you kind of plug into. But there's some cross-pollination there too, right?
Between popular forms of dance and contemporary dance?
Sure, yeah.
Sure. I mean, contemporary dance draws on all kinds of forms it can do. But what you're asking is definitely a huge question. I think that there's – obviously, I think there's a market for it. I love this form so much, and oftentimes it's just sad. I think that we're used to turning to our television sets or our computers for entertainment. We're not used to kind of putting out $15 to go see a dance performance, and it's I think it's harder for people to access in some ways. But every time I bring friends who have never seen dance or at all, have no reference for it, to a contemporary dance show, it always blows them away. And it's sort of like they, almost immediately become addicts. So it's just like how to get people, into the theater, how to make that first step that's a huge conversation. And I feel like dance artists and producers and presenters are constantly grappling with that question. And it's, I think we're fighting a culture that just, you know, we just don't do that. We don't look to live performance as our form of entertainment or a form of, you know, whatever, getting information, you know, just a way of seeing art. Like we look to other arenas for that.
Yeah, especially those kind that you can hold in your hand. And Chris Hecox, I imagine that would be a major challenge for you to overcome that. I have the whole planet, the whole universe on my phone. Why should I plunk down actual money mm-hmm. and go to Ruby Diamond Auditorium or TCC's theater or wherever there's a live performance happening? I got it right here and it's free.
Yeah, well, but the beauty of live performance is that it's something that's happening in that space of time. when you listen to that CD, it's the same thing. They recorded it during a certain space and time when this musician might have felt a certain way, and then when they perform it live, they might have felt a different way. So, I mean, you're really getting something completely different every time you see something live. And I think it translates also to dance and theater as well. But there's just a magic about seeing performances live. I mean, if I think about the times in my life that I've been impacted by something, you know, the top 10 are performances that I saw live that impacted me in some way, not just musically, but emotionally, physically, spiritually. And I think that you just can't get that sitting in front of a computer or watching it on TV or even just listening to a recording. I mean, it's something that happens when you're in that space, when you're experiencing it with other people in the audience, and you're experiencing what the artist is presenting to you at that time.
A younger contemporary of mine kind of put it this way, which is, you know, okay, let's see. I can go to the party, which is at a friend's house, and meet lots of new people and have plenty of interaction and have a really, really good time, or I can see someone else's party on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which am I going to opt for?
Right, uh-huh. Exactly.
For me, it's really exciting. I'm often on the stage side, so I'll be on stage, you know, telling a story or dancing. And yeah, like Chris said, I'm feeling something, I'm thinking something. I am trying to, in a way, somehow communicate. And then there's often an audience who's sitting a little bit away from me, but there's this space in between, and there's what an audience member is thinking and what I'm thinking, and somewhere in the space those thoughts meet and something so exciting happens there, and that's what I think is so visceral and exciting.
A preview of 7 days of opening nights here on Perspectives, 414-1234, 800-926-8809. Calls are lining up. We'll get to them when we return. Class performances right here in our own hometown area. 7 days of opening nights upcoming, and that's what we're talking about here on Perspectives with Chris Hecox, the new executive director of 7 days of opening nights, along with outstanding performers, choreographer, and dance artist Emily Johnson, and also Aretha Aoki here with us too. To the phones we go. Kate here in Tallahassee. Hi, Kate.
Hello. How
hey.
Are you?
Wonderful. How are you?
I'm excellent. I want to plug for the community to come out and see the work that's being done by all the performers with 7 days of opening nights, but especially for Emily's show that's coming up. Emily had the opportunity to work here in town with all kinds of researchers, mm-hmm. and she came and worked with me as a storyteller mm-hmm. when she first came for the Thank You Bar, mm-hmm. and I was so amazed at the incredible depth in which she captured our community in every one of her dances that she's done. It's about place. It's about the connection of people one to another, both performer, musicians, and audience, mm-hmm. and it's one of those organic, hands-on things that you will never have the opportunity to see again.
Hi, Kate.
Hey.
Kate, I need to hire you as my new PR director.
Well, I tell you, it changed my life significantly as a storyteller and performer that I was just blessed. And I've seen her do that performance in several different settings, and mm-hmm. each time it's organically different mm-hmm. from the first time you saw it.
Yeah. You sound like a fan, Kate.
I'm a fan. I'm a fan, and I hope that you will be a fan, too. You should be there.
We appreciate the plug. We really do. Well, Emily, tell us when exactly you're part of 7 days of opening nights. Well, what's that all about, the when, the where, all that?
Yeah, it's a world premiere. I've been working on this piece, Ni Chung Ni, for a little more than 2 years. And next Friday at 8 p.m., so Friday the 21st, at the Nancy Smith Victor Dance Theater, will be the world premiere. And it's presented and co-sponsored by 7 days of Opening Nights and the Maggie Alice National Center for Choreography. And I'm so, so excited to premiere it here. I mentioned my residencies at Mansi, and I feel like this piece has sort of grown here. And it's, in a way, it's from me. It's from my mind and my body and my thoughts. And that is often based in Alaska. That's where I'm from. And now I'm based in Minneapolis. But I keep coming here, and I keep being able to be here working with people like Kate Taluga and working with lots of different community members here in Tallahassee. And I keep being able to be at Mansi researching and creating. And so I feel like another home is here in Tallahassee, and I'm so excited to present Ni Chung Ni here.
But It's like you were saying before, you dance differently in Alaska than you do in Minneapolis, than you do in Tallahassee, because you're incorporating that sense of place into what you're doing.
Yeah. I mean, yes. I was trying to extrapolate, but yes, there's a difference because if there wasn't, I wouldn't be, I'm making a human form. Dance is a very human form. We talked a little bit earlier about that maybe sometimes dance is possibly a little hard to understand, and I do appreciate that, and I do know that is can be an issue, but to me, I have a very, very broad definition of what dance is, and I was talking to some architecture students yesterday in rehearsal, and I was describing to them that, I can sit outside and I can sometimes watch some construction workers, or I can watch traffic, or I can watch birds flying. And it's that, to me, is research in dance. And that is its own dance. And I'm not trying to steal ideas from those activities, but I'm just trying to see the world moving. The world moves all the time. We're all moving all the time. Even when we're, there's us sitting around here on the table, and we have so much movement happening inside of us and our own histories and our own futures. And so that is dance. And so, that's – I know it's a broad definition, but I think then dance can also be so, so inclusive.
But it sounds very similar to what a painter would do, looking at different shapes, textures, colors, and interpreting that in new and exciting ways, that where the creativity kicks in. And that's what you do with dance.
Yeah. And for me, there's also maybe a slight difference. I'm not sure. But that – when I try to think about how my work, how my dances are then in relationship to all these other dances that are happening in the world. Yeah. And it's that relationship and that communication that's really interesting to me.
Well, let's see if Amelia can kick in some additional thoughts into the conversation here. She's all the way down in Clearwater. I bet she's listening to us streaming live. Hi, Amelia.
Hi.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. I was fortunate enough to see Emily perform in the spring, a preview of her piece, and I remember distinctly the fish skin lanterns, and I just wondered if she could maybe elaborate a little bit on them, because they're absolutely beautiful, and just the story behind them and how they're incorporated into the piece.
Yeah. Thank you, Amelia. It's nice to hear from you. How an idea pops into your head is also really fun to think about and so interesting to think back on. And a couple of years ago, I was back home in Alaska, and I saw an exhibit of work made of fish skin. It was at a gallery in Alaska, and it was all contemporary work, sculpture, jewelry, vessels, wall hangings, and it was all made of fish skin. And for me, fish has been part of my life forever and beyond forever. My family has always harvested wild salmon in Alaska, because that's what we eat throughout the year, and it's always been a really family-oriented process. and fish sort of keep coming back into my work. And I saw this exhibit, and I wanted to learn how to work with fish skin. So I took a class from an amazing artist, Audrey Armstrong, in Alaska, and we made these traditional-style Athabascan baskets. And she said that once we know how to work with the fish skin, we can make anything we want. And I just had this image in my mind of 50 lanterns made of fish skin hanging over the stage and up over the audience in the house, and sort of creating a second ceiling or a plane over everybody and sort of holding us all in this one space. And so I started making the lanterns, and they're incredibly time-consuming to make, and it's a wonderful process. You start with a fillet of fish, you fillet it, you eat it, you have a feast, you start to scrape the fish, and then you keep the skin wet as you're sewing, and you form it. It takes days and days, so there's no way I could make 50 of these. So I started making these in these free community workshops that I offered in Vermont with Vermont Performance Lab, and in Minnesota and California. And people would gather. It was amazing. 15 to 20 people would gather for 5 days for like 6 hours a day. And we would sit together and sew these lanterns. And they were learning this new skill, this new way of working with this new material. And I kept the lanterns, and they're part of the set. And we would always have a big feast. And then suddenly, we're all getting to know each other. Strangers gather around a table, and we're making this object. And it became such a wonderful I don't know, that to me was the dance itself, almost, like creating these objects was such an important part of making this piece. And now those objects live in the dance. And I think all of the work of all of those people live in the dance that way.
So that's where that photo came from, because if you go to 7daysfestival.org, you will see a picture of Emily Johnson, and she is proudly with this twinkle in her eye holding this fish aloft. Mm-hmm. I thought, what does this have to do with dance?
Yeah.
You just explained. Aretha, okay, your approach to dance, though, because Emily's creating a lot of things as far as choreography is concerned, whether for individuals or ensembles or whatever, and your approach to dance, if someone like Emily handed you essentially a choreographic guide and said, here, dance this, how much interpretation do you get to do on stuff like that?
Well, it depends. It depends on the project. With Emily, she's very collaborative and inviting of input, and so it's actually wonderfully it involves me in a really wonderfully whole way. So there are times when she is teaching me movement, and I'm trying to learn that movement as best I can, as close to the original as possible. And there are other times when it's a little bit more of a score. We did a lot of improvisation in the beginning, which was really sort of this wonderful kind of entry into some of her initial impulses and concepts in the work. So I remember we were in Vermont. That was our first residency together. And we actually went outside of the studio that we would eventually perform in on the land, and we did these scores of remembering where we were born, the land that we were born on, and really trying to put ourselves there and closing our eyes and improvising, and then thinking about the land that we were standing on in the present and the land that we had just come from. So for me, back then it was New York City, so that we had all these different lands built up and actually putting ourselves there. So then there's like an immediate kind of quality and just kind of a frame of mind that sort of exercise put me in. I've also, she has involved us all in the cast. There are two musicians and a lighting designer in some of the other aspects of the work. So I got to sew a lantern at our last residency. And in the beginning at the Grange, we were working with like paper mache lanterns at the time, like just little sort of prototypes. So I've been involved in that part of the work as well. Emily writes a lot of stories. She's invited me to write some stories. So it's been really fun to be involved in all these different ways, and it's helped me be inside the work in a fuller way.
Well, it's not just left foot, right foot. This is an entire holistic thing.
No,
huh?
And I mean, each process is really different, as I say. There are some pieces I've been in where you really are just learning. That's more and more, I feel like that's rare, but, you know, you really are just learning specific set material. I think a lot of choreographers do want you to know how to improvise and incorporate that into the work. But yeah, it's every process is.
Yeah, don't check your artistic license at the door, huh?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah, it's not a dumb dancer thing.
I've seen some dumb dancers over the years. Chrissy Cox, talk beyond the dance, of course. There are many other kinds of artistic expressions captured in 7 days of opening nights. Talk about some of the things you have coming up. We got, of course, the dance here on the 21st at the Nancy Smith Theater, where Emily will be doing her thing there. But what else do we have on tap?
Yes, we have dance and music and visual art and theater, movies. I mean, really, we're encompassing all artistic endeavors, and we have an author coming as well. But, I mean, anything from Wynton Marsalis and the Jazz at Lincoln Center Orchestra to Bernadette Peters to the Second City Comedy Troupe that's coming in from Chicago, via Hillary Hahn. We just have a plethora of artists that are coming to town between now and March and April, actually, of next year.
A hometown hero, Marcus Roberts,
yes.
Other folks like that.
Right. Marcus, who's on faculty at Florida State, will be performing the music of Jelly Roll Morton with an octet. There'll be students involved in that, faculty, and another Marsalis brother, Jason Marsalis, will be here as well.
Back to the phones we go. Eden here in Tallahassee. Hi, welcome to Perspectives.
Hi, how are you?
Real good. Thanks for calling.
I wanted to comment on what I think is a pretty profound difference between live performance and video. Years ago, the Urban Bush Women came to town and performed at Ruby Diamond Auditorium, and at the beginning, they had everybody who had worked with them up on stage, and then the music started, and this crowd on stage parted, and this woman came, this really powerful dancer with these huge, gigantic thighs, came thumping down the middle of the stage. And she created so much noise with her body that I could actually feel the sound waves just, like, pound against my chest. Mm-hmm. And in that moment, as much as what she was doing that I could see with my eyes, it was the percussive sound of her dancing that was just incredibly dynamic for me and brought up all these ideas about women and mm-hmm. power. And now when I go to watch a dance performance, I love the sound of the dancer's mm-hmm. feet. Sometimes they'll make a tweaking sound on the floor. I love the being able to hear the people around me when they're leaning forward, kind of with a hushed breath. Everybody's sort of holding their breath. Those are such an important part of live performance that we can never get from a video.
Mm-hmm. Boy,
giving me chills.
Me too. Yeah.
Love the description there, Eden. That's mm-hmm. absolutely terrific. Yeah. But it is remarkable to me how we are even talking about this. Mm-hmm. That 15, 20 years ago, we would never be having this discussion because it was assumed that a live performance was in all ways superior to any other representation of it that you could have. You know, even a stage play in many ways is superior to a movie because it's multidimensional. Mm-hmm. It's not just something on a flat screen. And now we seem to have an entire multi-generations that are screen-oriented.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I love those. I love seeing movies. I love seeing – I get a lot out of seeing movies. I think that these different forms offer different things, and unfortunately our culture is more predisposed to watching things off of a screen and less, you know, being in a live environment. So just – yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Chrissy Cox, you've got also, I guess, one of the, if not an objection, a concern on the part of some folks. In fact, I thought I heard that, originally when Roy called up maybe, you know, oh, it's so expensive. My gosh, the ticket prices are just outrageous, and there's no way that you can really avail yourself of all of these wonderful offerings, you know, unless you're pretty well healed. So how much does it cost to go to these things?
Actually, it's quite reasonable. We have tickets that range from obviously some of our bigger events like Bernadette Peters, $95, but tickets that go all the way to $25, $20. And we do have free events as well. We have the Saturday Matinee of the Arts. It's at the Tallahassee Museum. That's always free. We have master classes with dance, music, theater. Our author that's coming in, Cheryl Strayed, that will do master classes and workshops that some of them are available for the community as well. But we always offer a $10 student ticket. It's very important that the access is there for our students on campus and surrounding. We also have an educational program, not just at the university, but in our K-12 schools in Leon County that we started last year, where we take the artists into the schools and offer free performances for our middle school and high school students. We took the Carolina Chocolate Drops into the schools last year. This year, we're going to have Second City doing some workshops with theater students in high school. We're going to have the Creole Choir of Cuba going to a school. We're going to have students invited to Ruby Diamond for a performance of the Preservation Hall Jazz Band from New Orleans, and just a number of things like that. So we are creating a sense of access to the arts. It keeps on going up, the price of tickets just even go to a movie. So we are keeping our prices down. Support from the community, support from our corporate sponsors, our individual sponsors helps to keep our ticket prices down when we bring these artists to town. So we're very appreciative of them as well. But yes, we're very mindful of ticket prices and offering some free things and keeping our prices as low as possible. And one thing I do want to say is, one of the fortunate things about our ticket prices here in Tallahassee is if you look at these events happening in other cities around Florida, New York, Georgia, North Carolina, I mean, our prices are well below what it would be if you went and saw it in Atlanta or Tampa or Miami.
We're talking about 7 days of opening nights on WFSU-FM's Perspectives, 414-1234, 800-926-8809. It just really does not seem possible. 1999, when Tallahassee decided to party as if it were 1999 by instituting this thing called 7 days of opening nights, which was literally what it was back then on its debut year, and now has gone on to be nearly a year-round kind of thing with world-class performers and performances, and we're so fortunate and honored to have a couple of folks associated with the performing arts with us today. Emily Johnson, whose choreography has been just acclaimed all over the place, and Aretha Aoki, who is also a dance artist and the newly named executive director of 7 days of opening nights, who is Chris Heacox. And of course, your input too at 414-1234 800-926-8809. Emily Johnson, just for my own edification here, your reaction to that whole popular music thing again, because I know so many folks who are into the Dancing with the Stars and the more hip-hop kind of dance ensembles that are out there right now and all. How do you see that working into that, the whole thing of modern dance?
I mean, I love that work too. And I don't think it really makes a lot of sense to create partitions and to create, definitions are useful in some way, and in some way they just create division or limit understanding or limit, they're just limiting. And so I think the world of movement and the world of performance encapsulates so much. It is the world itself, and it's been around always in many different forms. A form of communicating via dance, via stories, has always been here, and it's always been a way that we get to understand each other and understand our world. And you can do that through, going to a club, and you can do that through watching Dancing with the Stars, I suppose. I have personally not seen that show. And you can do that by coming to a theater. I think all of those forms are absolutely part of our world and valid and good.
From a performer, Aretha, what's your favorite form of dance? What do you? I mean, what really connects with you?
I guess my favorite would be what I'm doing and what I see, which is more the world of contemporary dance. But it's harder to define as a form. It's, contemporary dance is dance that's happening now, which is, comes from a history of all kinds of dance forms, but is also about exploring form or challenging form. You know, it's about taking the form forward. Mm-hmm. So that's what's really exciting to me about it is that, we don't know what it is. You can teach, as you mentioned, Martha Graham, you can teach Graham because it's this codified technique and there's these set of moves. With contemporary dance, it's, who knows what – it can be so many things. And a lot of work is simply researching movement and, as Emily said, that dance can be anything, and that really opens up all kinds of possibilities for what, dance is. So it's sort of like – feels like this limitless thing. Mm-hmm. Dance right now I think is also very – starting with the kind of Judson Church era and the influence of John Cage, it's very interdisciplinary. And I think Emily really kind of in a lot of ways embodies that in her work. It's not just – we're interacting with all these other forms. We're interacting with the visual arts. We're interacting with music in different kinds of ways. And theater, we're talking on stage. It's
It's become a very liberated kind of art form.
Yeah, and, right. And this is why a place like Mansi is so important because, like Aretha mm-hmm. was saying, we don't, you step into the studio and you maybe have some ideas and you maybe have a direction you want to go, but really – You're creating something new. You're starting, mm-hmm. and you need research, and you need process, and you need time to create something new. It is always a new form.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I think Chris Hecox is so great about 7 days of opening nights. You touched on the educational and the outreach component there, but to take folks behind the scenes and what goes into this, it's not just what you see on stage. Or what you hear being performed. There's all these other things that are going on. And so you give people insight into the creative process, really.
Absolutely. And that's what's great about having a performing arts series at a university or a college. We are given that opportunity to, have an educational experience behind it as well. So not only are our students gaining from the experiences that they're receiving from the artists, but our community is doing that as well. So I think it's just wonderful to be able to present on a university or a college campus because of that.
And you take it one step further. This is also because you talk to the people at the Chamber of Commerce and the Economic Development Council and all these people who are looking for a way to make this community, this region, a even more desirable place to relocate. A new survey came out, said that for retirees, this is one of the hottest communities in the country. And no one ever, Tallahassee's a college town. It's not like a Fort Myers or Sarasota where you have a big retiree population. But the survey was saying, no, you guys got it all. This would be a great place for people to have those kinds of experiences and not just, hang out playing bingo all day long. But at the same time, you also have the dynamism that comes with this sort of thing that can attract young professionals who bring their own kind of energy to the community as well. So this is really a pivotal part of the of this whole community experience, or at least it has become that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's 7 days from the onset has been about bringing the community together through the arts, and it does a fantastic job of that. I mean, again, with what Emily has done when she's come here, she's brought the community into her work, and it's so important that we are reaching out to our community and doing it through the arts, and Emily's work is just a testament to that.
Mm-hmm. Have you thought of starting a school full time?
Starting school. I think it's I think it's related. I certainly do teach, but I don't consider myself a teacher. I'm just really curious and always,
interested in talking and trying new things in creating work. And Chris just mentioned working with community, and in this piece in particular, in Nichungni, there are 40 community members from Tallahassee who will appear on stage with us. And that comes from a desire, and that will happen. Nichungni has a national tour set up, and that will happen in each community that we go to. And so for me, it's wonderful because I get to meet people who live here, you know, who know things about this place that I won't know and can't know because I don't live here. And having people who live here on stage with us is really important to this work and to me. And so I work with different groups of people. Yesterday I was working with architecture students. We were talking about, okay, as a architecture student, what do you do in a space? Like, what do you do when you enter a room if your, you know, assignment is to redesign or you know, if you have an idea from a client, what do you do? And they stepped onto our stage area. We were working in a studio, and they stepped onto the stage area, and they were looking around, and they ended up like sort of going to the perimeters of the space, and I was just watching, and everybody was looking and curious and touching the wall or touching these lanterns that were hanging, and it was just real action. They were actually curious and thinking about the space in a different way actually than I think about space, and to see that happening on stage, it was really beautiful for me to watch and really exciting, and so it's things like that that will happen on stage with us as we're performing sort of this content that's very much about paying attention to where we live, paying attention to each other, paying attention to the ground beneath our feet. But that incorporates things like the things that we do every day, drive to the grocery store, pick out our groceries, you know, brush our teeth. Like, normal actions are part of our everyday life, and those, in a way, come into play in Nichungni. Yeah.
Okay. Well, Abreeth, if I could ask you, what does dance bring to your life?
Dance is a way for me to connect to what it means to be alive, to put it simply. I feel the most alive when I'm on stage. It helps me to make sense of where I'm going, which is, you know, in the ground. We're all headed there. It's this tremendous, it's a practice to me. It feels like a real practice that I would almost say is a spiritual one of like really like committing to something and then really having to let go. It's painful. And it's also brings me immense joy. I don't know. I feel really lucky to be doing this. Is, you know, it's not an easy path. You know, I'm not making a whole lot of money. I lived in New York for a while. That was not easy, you know, trying to go to rehearsal and balancing that on top of a day job. But it somehow just, I just feel continually called to it, I guess.
Yeah, but the physical demands, you don't have to worry, you know, if you're a sculptor or a painter,
yeah,
you're not going to have too many sprained ankles, probably.
Yeah, yeah. Knock on wood, I haven't had. Yeah. Sprained ankle.
But still, that's something that you, part of your art is also,
yeah,
the you have to be solid physically,
right,
as a performer in order to do this.
Yeah, and I think that's something that's happened in the history of, in the more recent history of dance, is that there is this kind of it's been informed by kind of considerations of wellness, and there are all these they're called somatic practices that inform dance, and it's not so much about going to the gym and, you know, being in shape or whatever, and I think a lot of work too considers that, you know, that element, like you're using your whole body, and you're trying to use it in a way that is intelligent and good for it. So, and I don't think of it. I mean, there are times when through whatever, like, you do have to be aware that, you know, exhaustion can take you to a certain kind of place, for instance. But I feel like for the most part, dance enables me to inhabit my body in a intelligent and healthier way.
Now, how many of us can honestly say with that degree of certainty, this is what makes my life worth living? Mm-hmm. And is that's and that's what I really like, Chris, that we have artists of this caliber.
Absolutely.
Who are bringing that their whole lives. Okay, here I am, take me, you know, which is what you have to do as a performance artist, you know, regardless of whether it's music or dance or anything else. But we're at that level when we look at the artists that are part of 7 days of opening nights.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We're very fortunate to have them here. So if you can come out on Friday, the 21st of September, which is next Friday, at the Nancy Smith Victor Dance Theater. The performance is at 8 o'clock. Tickets are $25 for adults and $10 for students. Tickets can be purchased at the FSU ticket office at 644-6500 or online at tickets.fsu.edu. All of the ticket proceeds are going to the Mansi Scholarship Fund. So you will not only be seeing a wonderful performance and being part of this, but you'll be supporting Mansi's efforts for students and for education. So we're very, very happy that we're able to partner with Mansi and be able to bring Emily here, but also support them financially and support the students that go through Mansi as well. So.
And as you said, Emily, this is world premiere. This is the first time anyone's going to see this thing.
Yep.
Yeah, you got to be excited about that.
I'm very excited. I'm very excited. Yeah. Yep. I'm, you know, the nerves bubble up also, but I'm very excited.
But to have people in the community involved in this and all, the term herding cats comes to mind here.
Mm-hmm. No. Haven't had that problem. we're working with, I think this time around, we're working with those architecture students I mentioned. Hello, if you're listening. You guys are amazing. We're working with some professional caregivers, some yoga practitioners, some roller derby girls. And everyone has and some dance students also. And everyone has their own particular role as a group when they work in Nitungmi with me. We're actually looking for some more caregivers and yoga practitioners to work with us. If anyone's interested, you can contact us. We have it does take a little bit of rehearsal. So there's about two rehearsals that it takes and then, you know, performing at the show. But if you're interested,
where should they?
I think you can contact. I work with Max Wersing, and you can contact him at max@catalystdance.com. And, you know, if it works out time-wise and if you're interested, that would be great. Mm-hmm.
And Catalyst Dance is the also the website that that has, like, I found all the, you know, background on you and so many of the other projects that you're involved with right there, too.
Yep. Catalystdance.com has my past work and current work and,
What's the deal, though, with the caregivers? You know, I can understand, you know, members of Capital Punishment, the local roller derby gals, because they have their own choreography.
We've
worked
with them before.
But what's with the caregivers? What do they bring to this kind of performance?
Well, in each town that we go to, we work with different groups of people. That's just a way for me to organize. So, like, maybe at some town we would work with radio broadcast hosts. You know, it's just a way for me to frame, like, a chosen particular interest. So, you know, you as a working in radio and broadcast, something brought you to this and some interest. And so I imagine if we gathered eight, you know, radio broadcasters in one room and we were sitting around a table and we could start to have a conversation and there would be something similar, like some sort of similar perhaps conversation might bubble up, like some interest. And then I think about, what do you do? What do you do in your day here as part of this interest, as part of this work? And maybe some sort of particular gesture comes up, you know, maybe some kind of equipment or some, like, way of relating to people. And so we just start to talk and we just start to develop a gesture based on your interest and what you do. And it might not be a recognizable gesture from the audience. If you were a baseball player, it might not it wouldn't be swinging a bat. It would be something a little more subtle, a little more common. I think I'm always looking for something common among us. And so you get a group of people in one room. What among us is a common thing?
Boy, that would be scary. 8 radio people on a stage dancing. Oh, my God. I don't even want to think about that. Chrissy Cox, Aretha Aoki, and, of course, Emily Johnson, thanks so much for coming
on.
Thanks for having us.
Perspectives to talk about 7 days of opening nights. Can't wait. Perspectives produced by WFSU FM in Tallahassee. Taylor Cox doing the technical thing today. Michael Fleming on phones and emails. And I'm Tom Flanagan. Join us again next week. More expert opinion and your input right here on Perspectives.
Audio copies of Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcast. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.